That's it. Well, good morning, everyone, and thank you for being here, and thank you for inviting me to and Rose Goldstein to make a presentation about the Achieving Strategic Academic Priorities and our Strategic Research Plan. But before I begin, I've been holding these meetings now in every faculty council, and I've gone to several student councils, and I always start, because of the tense times in which we're living, to see if there are any questions that I can answer about where we are in our labor disruption. So if you have any questions, I'm willing to take them. Where are we? Right now we're in the faculty club, and we're... So I think there's a couple of things that you should all be aware of. First, they're in a full-day negotiation, conciliation meeting today. It's starting in about half an hour or so. And that's a good sign from the point of view of everyone involved, because the conciliator would not have called them back if she didn't think that there was opportunity for arriving closer and closer to a settlement. As you know, she had broken off the talks a week ago, and now they're back. So I think that's a really good sign, and we should take it as positive that the conciliator sees that progress can be made. Both sides have agreed, as I understand it, I'm not at the negotiating table, obviously, I'm here, but both sides have agreed that they would not talk about the substantive issues that are presently being discussed, but we all know what those substantive issues have come down to. It's really about a wage settlement and some consultation issues regarding pensions and benefits. So I think we've come a long way from where this started, and where we are now is today all we can do is hope that the conciliator sees continuing progress on both sides so that she's willing to keep the talks going until we get a settlement. Now, that'll be decided today at the table, but I think the fact that she called us back where we are is good. At least they're still talking. Any other questions? God, I haven't had that much silence since I taught elementary statistics. It's great. Okay, well, again, I think we should, there's something else I want to say. At 11 o'clock and again at 1 o'clock, Human Resources, Lynn Gervais and her team, are going to be holding meetings that were originally designed for the M3s and M4s in the room, but anyone who's here is welcome to stay if they have the time for those meetings, which are going to be about what it's going to be like and how we're going to proceed for reintegration of the MNACA workforce after such a long strike. The strike has, in some instances, become personal, and there's some acrimony, and we really need to get over that as we come to the end, we hope. And that's why I said conciliation is a good thing. And our own planning now, as much as all of you have been absolutely spectacular in the efforts that you've put in realizing the contingency plans for how we would operate the university without 1,700 of our employees. So I want to congratulate all of you for the excellent work that you've been doing and the extraordinary efforts you've put in, Herculean efforts to try to keep the university functioning, certainly not as usual, but functioning in a way that would give our students the opportunity for an education, our professors a chance to continue to submit research grants and conduct their research, and for all of us to serve each other where we could in making sure that things got done. So just let me say for you, congratulations and thank you. But reintegration meetings, I think you should take that as a second good sign. We really do want now to be prepared. As we were prepared in case a strike happened, we want to now be prepared to bring people back. And I know that the HR team has some really interesting and good ideas, and they need to work with all of you to make it happen so that it's very smooth. Let me just say one other thing. I sent a message to all the chairs, deans, and directors yesterday about Christmas parties. Someone had said, let me backtrack for a minute. My first job as an administrator at McGill was to be the vice principal for information systems and technology. And everybody told me, and I thought I knew, that information systems were based on hardware, software, and data. And then I became the provost of McGill, and I realized that information systems are based on rumor, gossip, and innuendo. So the rumor that was being spread is that the MUNACA employees would not be welcome to come to Christmas parties in any organizations that were having Christmas parties, or that if they did come, that wouldn't be, the university wouldn't, or the departments and faculties wouldn't reimburse for those parties. I sent a note to all the deans saying that's just absolutely not true. All the way through this strike, whenever there have been events that could have included members of MUNACA, they have been invited. If they choose not to come, that's different. But there's absolutely no restriction. These are our employees. They're part of the community. We want them back, and they're welcome to all the parties. So please make sure people know that as we go forward. Last chance. Yes. Oh, yes, I should actually tell you that last night 77% of the TAs voted in favor of the university's offer. So that is actually great news. And there was a really, in the middle of trying to deal with MUNACA, Robert Como and the team at HR, Maud, Anna, and Professor LeBeau, as well as an advisory committee of academics who met to look over the discussion topic that was transformed into an offer. I want to make that clear. The university didn't table a final offer, but had discussions with AGSEM and the TAs about a possible settlement, and their negotiating team was so enthusiastic about what we had put on the table that they brought it back and said they would vote on it, and they did. And again, 4 out of 5 in favor is a pretty good sign. So again, congratulations to the HR team for doing that, and thanks to the advisory team for helping out as well. So, I think that's the last question on labor. I'll come back to some others. Okay, what I want to do is to spend a couple of minutes talking to you about achieving strategic academic priorities, but I wanted to put that in context for what the M staff at McGill are, what our budget context is, how updating and consulting about strategic academic priorities are important, and the processes we're using to do that. Rosie Goldstein will talk about the strategic research plan, and then we'll have a chance for some discussion of these two plans. One of the things that we're looking for in terms of the way in which strategic direction should focus for the university as it relates to all of you is that we want to make sure that every one of you has an opportunity to develop your career through professional HR programs. So as your employees of McGill, you work your way through different things, we want to make sure that there's an opportunity for all of you to develop personally. Because your personal development, if it's aligned with the university's strategic goals, will mean that we'll both be successful. And that's the only way in which it makes sense for you to have a job at McGill is for an M-level employee to think about it as a career, to see a trajectory, to have opportunities for training, and to put into practice the things that you've learned by being consulted about the things that go on in your area. The second thing that's important for M staff in the way we're thinking about the strategic directions of the university is backtrack for a minute. We've learned a lot during the last 12 weeks. We've learned about processes that many of us have not been involved in before because we've assigned that work to others. Now that we've learned about those processes, we think we might have learned something about how to do them better. That means that you have to think about transitions. How would you transition what you're doing now, the present state, to what you'd like it to be in the future? And that also means thinking about how you develop the people who report into you. So there's got to be a sense of succession in the jobs that move and a transition away from doing it the way we've always done it to doing it a slightly different way. One of the other things, a third thing is, as you learn about how to do things better, we want to make sure you have opportunities to share that experience with others in your group. Because each of us will develop or could develop what is a best practice in our own little corner of the university, and then not share it And then it's not a best practice, it's an isolated practice, and it doesn't test itself against the ideas that other people have. So we want to make sure that you have the opportunity to share your best practices and develop them with others. It also means that we have to listen to you better about recognizing where new opportunities for doing things differently that are more efficient and that are more satisfying in terms of career development are. So we want to make sure there are opportunities for recognition and rewarding good ideas that come along. There, McGill is notorious in terms of the perception that our students have, many of our faculty members have, and a lot of you have, about being overburdened with bureaucracy, entirely too much red tape. How do we eliminate that? How do we simplify processes? How do we make sure that when we've figured out how to simplify those processes, we can share them with others? So we really do want there to be an opportunity for all of you to think about simplifying processes, have an opportunity to do it in your own areas, and if it's a good practice, generalize it to others. And that's the last point is that means participating in thinking strategically about the university, and that's why I'm coming to the M group about what are achieving academic priorities. The M group at McGill has grown considerably over the last 5 years. I took the 2005 and 2010 staffing reports as I present them and as HR Lynn Gervais presents them to, and now Michael DeGrappa presents them to Senate. We broke it down by family categories, but overall, from about 1,160 employees, we're now at over 1,550. That's 400 new M positions created at the university, 34% increase. 34% increase over the last 5 years. And it's not been evenly distributed, but there has been growth in every one of the categories. The single largest area of growth has been in the communication side. It's clear, as I mentioned earlier in answering some questions, that it's not business as usual. We are really working through challenging times, and this work disruption has meant that M staff have had to fill in for clerical and technical staff. And that's not always easy. Non-supervisory M staff have had to actually move up to fill in for supervisory M staff, as the supervisors have actually filled in for the striking workers. You've also had to train people and train yourselves about processes. And that means that sometimes we've had to limit the things we do to the absolutely most essential. That's a really important learning lesson to be learned, because when you really focus on what's core, what's essential, you get a better perspective on what things we've been doing that we might not need to do so that we can move on to doing new things that will help us to be more competitive and to serve the university better. We also, obviously, have had to deal with reduced service hours, and that means, it sounds interesting, we've reduced some of the service hours, but all of you have increased the number of hours you've had to work. But that's because you're doing multiple jobs. And that means you're experiencing a lot longer hours. And as I said earlier, I congratulate you and I thank you for all the efforts that you've put in. McGill really is a community. There have been moments during this strike when I wondered about that. I've had strikers at my house. I've been shunned as I walk the streets. People turn their backs, the strikers. But it is a community, and we want to know that the M staff have really filled in, and you've been there to meet the challenge, and you have a really important challenge ahead of you, and that is helping for the university reintegrate and develop that sense of community again. We're working our way through it thanks to your efforts and contributions, and you will have gotten on the 23rd of November notification that there will be some extra time off for all of you around the Christmas holidays or as soon thereafter as possible. 4 extra days were added. Michael DeGrappa and Lynn Gervais have decided, and I think rightfully, that you're just putting in too much time. You need some time to reflect, and we need to thank you for what you've done. The university will remain open during that time period. We're not closing until the 9th, but there will be opportunities either before the Christmas break, from the 3rd to the 6th of January, or immediately thereafter to give you some extra time off. And there will be other ways of recognizing your contributions, including the extra long hours that you've put in. We have to keep finding solutions, and the last thing we need is for any of you to burn out on the job as you're filling in for this work disruption. Let me go now to the budget. McGill budget context, we now have a new way of presenting the budget. It's integrated, but there are still four important parts that people sometimes confuse. And some of the publicity and some of the statements that are made by individuals who don't think we have a financial problem confuse these four funds. And let me just take you through them because you should know them. The first thing is our budget consists of an operating grant and tuition revenues and the sale of goods and services mostly related to self-funded programs at the university that consists of our operating budget. These activities are the core teaching activities of the university. In fact, the provincial government rarely recognizes anything related to our research efforts directly in the operating budget. So the operating budget is mostly based on the teaching function of the university, including the collection of tuition. That's the budget that almost all the time we talk about being in crisis, because the amount of money we get from the provincial government and the relatively low tuition fees that we collect are not sufficient to cover all of our expenses on the operating side. The second budget is always in balance, and that's the restricted budget. These are associated with our research activities, and they have very specific restrictions on them. Professors apply for research grants, they obtain those research grants, they then have to manage those research grants, and the university provides services to allow them to do that. And Rosie can talk more about those kinds of things if they come up in terms of your jobs. But those restricted funds have to balance. The research money comes in, it must be spent only and exclusively on research. So we might, in any given year, have a surplus in the research or restricted funds that cannot be used for other purposes except that for which the grant was given. So that money is off the table. It's not available for other purposes. The third fund is called plant funds. And that's really renovations, construction, emergency situations that arise across the university that deal with the physical infrastructure. The provincial government provides a relatively small amount of money given the size of McGill's campus and the age of our structures for it. But we can never take money from the plant fund and move it to restricted funds or to the operating budget. It's not allowed. Sometimes restricted funds can be used for construction projects, and sometimes operating funds can be moved to the plant fund. But it's only one way. It can't go backwards. I can't take money from the plant fund and put it into operations. So when people in the newspapers have been complaining that the university built, renovated the third floor of the James Building, which is for governance and has three meeting rooms, and they could have taken that money and put it to salaries, it's simply wrong. You can't do that. The government gives you money for building projects. You can spend more, but you can't spend less. And you can't transfer it from one fund to another. The last fund is an endowment, and McGill does have an endowment. It's the third largest endowment in Canada. But you don't use the endowment. You use the interest off of the endowment. And it is restricted. It's not free. Some of it goes to pay for salaries of professors. Most of it goes to provide scholarships and fellowships to graduate students and undergraduates. And some of it does support research activities across the university. So the endowment fund can feed the other three funds, but it's only the interest. And most of you, if you look at your bank accounts, will know that you're not getting a lot of interest on your savings. And the same is true with the endowment fund. We've actually had to reduce the amount that we can take out of the endowment to put into operations or research or construction. So those are the four funds. But The one that we talk about most often is the first one, the operating fund, and it is under continual pressure because 75% of that operating fund goes to pay salaries. So that's the biggest chunk. Three quarters of our entire operating budget goes into paying for salaries. The other things it has to pay for should be obvious. We all have to put computer equipment into, and that computer equipment is not any longer a plant fund. It's actually handled on the operating budget. You do have to have money available for programs and for activities that go on in departments. You have to bring visiting speakers here. You have to bring candidates here when we're interviewing for jobs. Departments and the university need to have some money that's not just for salaries in the operating budget. The budget context for McGill in terms of our commitments were we promised in fiscal year 11 that we would have a break-even budget. I want to just point out that it took us 5 years to get there. From 2005 to 2011, 2006 to 2011, we reduced the operating deficit of the university from 20 million to 15 to 10 to 5 to 0. So we broke even, but we've accumulated a debt. An accumulated deficit is now present in our on our books, and that is nearly $100 million. So that there's the plus side to that is interest rates are low. The negative side is they might go up. So we have to budget to pay off interest, just carrying costs on nearly $100 million at about roughly 2% a year is $2 million. If it goes up to 3%, it's $3 million. You can do it's real easy to do the math when you have a $100 million deficit. Each percent is $1 million. For this year, though, I went back to the Board of Governors and said, I can't really balance the books if we're going to meet all of our commitments. So they've allowed us to run a $6 million operating deficit. Now, the size of the operating budget is just under $600 million. So a $6 million deficit on $600 million is one penny on a dollar. That's usually considered non-material. I don't live in a world in which $6 million is non-material, but for most large organizations like McGill, if you come within 1% of balancing your budget, it's actually considered balanced. We also need to develop a five-year strategic plan so that we can continue to invest in our priorities but within the financial realities that we really face as a university. And our medium to longer term goal, obviously, is to return the university to a balanced budget and to have some surplus, certainly not a profit, right? To have some surplus that would allow us to pay off that accumulated deficit so that we're not burdened if interest rates do go up. So those are the constraints and commitments within which we're operating. For the five coming years, what we want to make sure we are able to do is to protect the quality and performance that McGill has attained. And we do get great results for the small amount of money that we have as a university. To manifest that in terms of our current investments and planning. We also need to have a five-year budget resource allocation framework that lines up with those strategies. We have to keep investing in our top priorities. And here we are doing something that we haven't been doing in the past, and that is being willing to measure ourselves, not only against ourselves, but against the best practices and the best universities that exist in North America. And then we also want to make sure that whatever strategies we develop as an institution can be reflected in what's done at the faculty and even departmental level. So we want to have initiatives available at that level. So, Achieving Strategic Academic Priorities, ASAP 2012, builds on the paper that was written 5 years ago called Strengths and Aspirations. And that paper provided an outline that led us for 5 years to invest in certain priorities and to balance the budget. So those two things have to go together. What are our priorities? How are we going to put resources to them? But do it in a responsible way that actually leads to as close to a balanced budget as we can come. We want this ASAP paper to outline our strategies for sustaining and furthering academic leadership. McGill has a great reputation, and its performance is far ahead of the amount of money we spend per full-time equivalent student or professor. We're able to do that because we have a strong culture of research, we have a strong culture of dedication to pedagogy, and we have a strong commitment to service on the part of everyone who works here. It also means, though, that our academic plan needs to be coordinated with every other plan we come up with. So the strategic research plan is really a centerpiece of the activities that go into our strategic thinking. But we also have a master plan for physical development, a campaign plan. The principals' task forces have led to priorities being established on student life and learning, and now diversity, excellence, and community engagement. We have to make sure that every one of the plans is lined up. This means we have to have great collaboration with deans, faculties, other offices across the university, with our Senate and Board of Governors. In order to make it work, we need your feedback. We need feedback and discourse from groups all across the campus, and the M group is particularly important for us, because as we begin to develop this strategic plan, as we begin to put kind of meat on the bones, we have to know that it is meaningful to you and that you can help us to achieve those goals. There are 10 basic goals that we have. In black are written the ones that were there in 2006, and then in red how we're trying to think about them today. The first is academic renewal. I did show you that we've actually grown by 34% in the size of the M staff, and that's a faster growth over the last 5 years than for the professoriate. In the earlier period, the professoriate grew faster. But over the 10-year period, we've tried to keep the balance of professors to our support staff relatively the same. So the ratios have remained the same as the university has grown. But we need good academics. We need excellent academics in order to retain our reputation and in order to improve our performance. But we have to think more creatively about how we're going to hire people and where we're going to put them. So we need new plans for hiring faculty. The core of the university is the undergraduate education we provide. We're not a research institute, we're a university. But we're a research-intensive university, and that means that the research that our professors do should have an impact on the quality of the education that our students receive. So we want to emphasize innovations in the way in which we deliver those educational programs, and we want everyone to have an opportunity to come to McGill regardless of their ability to pay. So we need to have more money put into financial aid. We also want to improve our graduate student experience, and once again, that means building on the strengths of our researchers to attract graduate students into the programs where we can sustain them. There are two ratios here. We want to keep the ratio of undergraduate students to tenure-track faculty very low. And in fact, we're among the lowest. We're the second lowest, I think, in the U15 group of universities in Canada, roughly around 14 undergraduate students, full-time equivalent students, to every tenure-track professor. On the other hand, we want the ratio of graduate students, in particular PhD students, to tenure-track faculty to be high, because we're research intensive, and graduate students make a fundamental contribution to research. So we want that ratio to go up, not to stay low. The third thing is we need to develop new ways, and Rosie will speak about these, of transformative research initiatives to build on our comparative advantage. And here's where you fit in much more closely to the academic plans. We want to develop quality support services, and we want there to be best practices shared across units. We've heard a lot in the past from this group about ways of changing some of our administrative practices, ways of supporting departments more. Never give up if you don't think you've been heard the first time. Keep on pushing on ideas. If you knock loud enough, someone will be at home. So keep on pushing for your good ideas. The sixth area is one I already mentioned. We want professional development for you. Career enhancement for administrative and support staff means alignment. You're going to be satisfied in your jobs if you see career trajectory. We're going to be happier with your productivity because you're going to be happier employees. So we want those two things to go together. You'll help us achieve the strategic goals if you achieve your personal goals. So set them high and force us to come in to encounter them. The, The other thing I said we weren't doing well before is performance management. And that means measuring ourselves with analytics, tools, feedback loops, figuring out where we are on our performance. The last three goals were not there in 2005. Providing service to Quebec and Canada, we've learned a lot about all the things we do in this community, and we're often not recognized for. We need to build on that. We need people to know that McGill is part of Montreal, part of Quebec, part of Canada, part of the world. How do we get that message out? What value are we adding? The ninth area is encouraging diversity in origin and ideas among our students and faculty and our staff. And here, this comes off of the principal's task force. We really do want to understand better how to get a more diverse employee group, more diverse faculty, and continue the diversity in our student body. The last thing is, coming out of a background in the Faculty of Arts, the last white paper that I wrote put a lot of emphasis on the core mission of the university in terms of arts and science. But we have lots of professional faculties and programs at McGill, and we didn't emphasize them enough, and we heard about that. So in this white paper, what we want to do is to ensure that McGill has a preeminent position in education for the professions. I've set up five work groups to try to help me understand how to achieve these goals and how to write the paper. The first is on academic renewal, the second on best practices, third on career development, fourth on service, and the fifth on professional education. I think in particular, the middle three groups are relevant to the M category. How do we understand how to provide administrative and support services to the university's academic mission? Some of you have skills that could be applied in many sectors. Some people working in finance could apply those skills in the insurance sector, in the banking sector, in industry somewhere, but you're at a university. How do your skill sets, your specific skills, intersect with the mission of the university? We want you to think about where you're working, not just who you are professionally, but where you're applying those skills. So best practices in support of the academic mission. What would a career trajectory for you, ideally, look like? Every one of you individually, and then thinking about your group. How can we align your career development with our academic goals? And what other kinds of services can we provide to the university, to the city and the province, as well as the country? So those are the work groups, and I'd really encourage you to get involved. But now I want to say we've got lots of mechanisms for doing that. I think we'll come back to this at the end because Rosie and I are doing this together. The ASAP measures of success. If we manage at the end of this in the early winter to have set the academic priorities for the next 5 years, it will have been a successful exercise. If we can incorporate findings from different ways of doing things than we've done in the past. Look, what made us successful in the past is no guarantee that we would be successful by doing that in the future. So we need to think differently. The world outside of McGill is changing rapidly. 25 years ago, there was very little competition among research universities in Canada. There were a couple. Now there are 15, and they're all good. We have a great university system in this country. McGill strives to be the best among them. How can we do that? We have to do things differently. We want to make sure that this paper, that this strategic paper, is the driver that will give us a sustainable multi-year financial and budget plan, that all of you in the community will embrace it, and that it provides a way for McGill to continue to be a strategic leader. But in order to lead, we also have to be first in research, and so I'm going to turn it over to Rosie before coming back. Thank you.
Thank you, Tony, for that introduction. And at the risk of breaking the momentum on the planning, I want to add my word of thanks and congratulations and gratitude for your hard work, for your hard work at all times in support of the research community. It's always very much appreciated, but particularly this semester, which has, as Tony's talked about in detail, been more challenging. So really my personal thank you for the hard work dedication, loyalty, and above all, professionalism, with which you always carry out your work, which has impressed me since I came to McGill just about a year ago, and which particularly this fall has been very impressive. So thank you, and I hope you'll enjoy the extra days of holiday and whatever else comes your way. So back to strategic research planning and ASAP and how we coordinate that. I like to start with the principles of the strategic research plan, which you have laid out in the slide, but really to underline for you what I'm sure you already know, which is how important the strategic research plan and the strategic research priorities are for McGill, how much a part of the mission research is, and that really in order to realize McGill's highest aspirations of staying in the leadership role in the research universities in Canada and the world, the plan is very important. The plan will set the strategic direction for the next few years for research, and as Tony's talked about in general for ASAP, in the research area, guide the utilization of our resources. So that's part of why this plan is very important. And it will be important in order to articulate our strengths, many of which I think are commonly known or we may know but need to be articulated, some of which we are maybe less known and which we need to bring more to the surface and to the light of day, I like to say. It also forms the basis of our research priorities and how we articulate them, not only internally to ourselves, amongst ourselves and to our research community and our students, but also to external communities and funders. So the overall goal of the strategic research plan is to support our research excellence and education. As Tony talked about, we want to improve the articulation, the nexus between research and education. It's part of what we believe makes McGill what it is. It's part of what is unique, relatively unique to us, which is the interaction, the positive interaction of not only our research excellence and education, and I'm not speaking only of the traditional research and graduate education nexus, which is very easy to understand and which we are usually traditionally referring to, but also, and very importantly, to the nexus between research and undergraduate education. As well, something we didn't talk about today too much is McGill's international standing, our reputation, but also our internationalization, our international nature. Our students' interest in international, our professors' interest in international endeavors, our very large number of the international students, both at the undergraduate level and graduate level, also part of McGill's very unique and excellent profile. So we want the plans to support the nexus between internationalization and students at all levels. It's my strong belief that all of these areas that are excellent at McGill, brought together, enriching each other more, will actually raise the level of all of the above, particularly our academic mission at McGill. So that's part of the setue into the strategic research planning. We want to focus on the priorities. That's what a strategic research plan, that's why it's called strategic, is about, while we support and acknowledge the research excellence across the broad McGill community, wherever it is found. And that's part of what McGill is. It's excellence in research across many disciplines. So I like to start with that because although I'm going to talk mostly about research, institutional research priorities, it's not the research excellence in the disciplines versus some priorities. It's really the latter, the institutional, broad, I'll get into interdisciplinary, usually, research priorities built on the basis of the broad excellence across the disciplines, wherever they're found. The emphasis in the plan will be on transformative research in established areas of excellence, but will also provide the substrate and criteria with which to make better known how these priorities are chosen and nurtured, but also looking for emerging priorities, or you call them nascent priorities, basically the next research priorities as well. Not only what we're excellent in today and what we want to build on, which is a large part of what we want to do, but also where do we want to grow, where perhaps we're not as excellent as we would like to be in a few years. And the reason being because we have strength and because we think these are the important areas in which to grow. And how are they important? How do we choose which are important? I alluded to criteria. It's around researchers wanting to be ready and McGill being ready to answer the important research questions. And we've heard this, actually, and I've learned this even more in the consultations with researchers. Researchers at McGill and elsewhere are driven by the passion, not simply for research, but the passion to answer important, complex questions that are important to humanity and to the world. And who better but a place like McGill to organize ourselves to actually really solve some of the world's most complex problems. So that's a bit of where what the research plan is about, basically, and also telling you some of what has emerged from the consultation in terms of what drives people so that this plan can actually be aspirational and inspirational. So we want, as part of that, we want to build on the research excellence. We want to build and nurture networks that are driven by that curiosity, that passion for answering important questions and being curious about what makes things work and how to make things better. We want to facilitate an environment that encourages that fundamental discovery excellence that we are known for, that we're so good at, but at the same time also facilitate the networking among ourselves at McGill as researchers, among ourselves and other great research institutions, and with other institutions, governments, and partners. That includes the community, that includes the corporate world. And so one of the words that will come out in the strategic research plan very strongly is that whole idea of partnerships. How do we build on our excellent research across the disciplines? How do we facilitate the networks that are based in partnerships? So although we're still very competitive, we always still talk about being at the top, and that means we're competitive, it's with a different view. It's with a different, a different way of operating, which is to build through partnerships, which is not maybe the traditional way McGill and competitive kind of universities have articulated their vision and mission. Lastly, we want to build knowledge translation. Build the knowledge translation on our basic discovery, and it doesn't mean becoming something that we are not. It's not moving away from fundamental curiosity disciplinary research, but it's really building on that research to bring social and economic benefit. And I always like to underline and emphasize that this is about commercialization and bringing ideas to market. It is about innovation. It's also broader than that. It's really about bringing our findings to the world, bringing the applications, be them social, be them implicated in policy, advising government, medical devices, engineering applications, products that and systems that can assist people in the world. I'll just mention briefly that the strategic research plan as Tony has said, we're aligning not only the plans themselves and the documents, we're doing the consultation together, we're assuring that the plans are integrated and that they balance one another and that they're congruent. And as such, the strategic research plan, we are concentrating on the components of the plan, particularly the research priorities, that need to feed into and be part of the ASAP plan. That will be delivered, I believe, around January, February, following which we will develop, using those research priorities, a standalone strategic research planning document. We need to do that because it's important to have that, but we also, our funders, and in particular federal and provincial government, Canada Foundation for Innovation, demand that we have a standalone document. So just so that you know, there will be two different documents, but as we've said, they will be very well aligned and serve to support each other. So we will want in this plan to communicate a very clear framework. We want to encourage interdisciplinarity. I've mentioned that, but I like to emphasize it's not interdisciplinarity for interdisciplinarity's sake. It is really because we have the strong belief, and there's evidence, that in order to answer those curiosity-driven, important, inspirational questions that are important in order to answer problems and provide solutions for important, complex human problems, we actually need the interdisciplinary approach. We often will find our way to better solutions if we work across the disciplines. It's my strong belief and others as well that the reason we haven't cracked many important, for example, health-related environmental problems that we seem to be talking about in the world for quite a long time is the difficulty of working across disciplines and the necessity to do that well in order to solve those problems. So that's the reason you will see an emphasis on interdisciplinary kind of research and education in our plans. Other last thing I want to say before I get into some of the priorities themselves as they're shaping up, and they're still very much draft, is that the same with ASAP, the SRP is not written on a blank piece of paper. It is based on previous plans, including strategic research priorities that were in the White Paper 2006, that were in the progress report, that have featured in strategic research plans at McGill. It also is based on, at least now, it's probably almost 2 years ago before I even arrived here, that faculties through the Associate Dean's Research and Deans were asked to do their own strategic research planning and feed us and the VP Research's office the faculties and departments' strategic research goals. So those will form a part of the document as well. The emphasis of my work and the emphasis on the document from an institutional perspective will be not on the specific faculty areas of excellence and priorities, but on 5 to 10, I like to say. My bias is closer to 5, but it pushes closer to 10, so it will be somewhere in between broad institutional research priorities to answer the big questions I alluded to that are more interdisciplinary and don't belong to one faculty. Part of that is to build on the faculty's excellence, and that way they have fed us those priorities and areas of excellence. And those have to continue to be supported because they are the foundation. Having said that, where we will put the university's added resources, where we will put the variation, where we will invest more, and that means time, people, including probably your time and efforts and the efforts of your teams and the resources, limited as they are, that is where these institutional priorities is where we will put that added benefit. We will not move everything there, but the added and the variable effort will be there. So as part of the consultation, Tony's already talked about, and this kind of forum is part of the consultation we've been doing for several months and will continue to do. We've received a lot of very wonderful engagement and feedback. I wanted to highlight a few committees that are important to the strategic research plan consultation. One is the Research Advisory Committee, which is a standing committee of all the Associate Dean's Research, directors of hospital research institutes, students, and some researchers at large that advise my portfolio on a regular basis and have been very much engaged in the strategic research planning consultation. We've developed and put together a special strategic research planning advisory committee, similar to the work group that Tony mentioned. This is essentially the work group on research that will feed ASAP and a strategic research plan, made up of approximately 10 or 12 faculty members, some researchers from across the faculty, the university, as well as students, both undergraduate, graduate, postdoctoral. And also, for the first time, my office has an external community-based advisory committee, which will be a standing committee to advise my office, has begun meeting this term. It's the first time the research portfolio, I believe, has had that kind of committee of external business and community leaders who are also, their first role has been to be engaged in the consultation for the strategic research plan. So these are the draft priority research areas on the next two slides. I think right now, sometimes I was telling Tony, sometimes I see them for the first time when I give the presentation because they change. We have been getting a lot of feedback, and they have been changing very slightly based on consultation because we actually do take your comments and feedback seriously. And we've also, the Strategic Research Planning Advisory Group has been working very actively. So these are very draft, I always say, and they may not appear this way in the final paper, but I like to show them to let you know these are the kinds of themes we're looking at. Each theme will be rather large, as you can see, and we're framing them as well around what I alluded to in terms of important questions. So, for example, the brain neurosciences at McGill, based on clear strengths that most people know about at McGill in neurosciences, might manifest itself in a series or the type of questions such as how do we unravel the mysteries of the brain in aging, something like that, in order to improve the human condition in aging. That's an example. Capitalizing on the biosciences revolution, for example, will encapsulate at least to some degree the area of biomedical or bioengineering, looking at how do we apply engineering solutions to modern important healthcare problems and biological problems, for example. So those are the kinds of questions that tend to come out of the researchers, and we are working very actively to refine the themes and the questions. One of the interesting, and these are some more on the second slide that I'm not going to read through. I think one of the things we've just actually started talking about is that one of the themes that has come up in the discussions is understanding and improving the human condition. Then someone added in a globalized world. And actually that started as one of the research themes perhaps and came up as a criticism that it was really understanding and improving the human condition was actually too broad and not specific enough, and we struggled with what it actually really means and what the research question is. And in those discussions, it came up that perhaps this was actually too broad to be a strategic research priority, but perhaps sufficiently broad and inspirational to actually be an umbrella theme for the entire plan. So we're actually getting feedback now. I'd be interested in your feedback on naming the plan something like understanding and improving the human condition in a globalized world. So I just throw that out there to be provocative and get your feedback. One of the interesting ones that has come up in this in the themes is the last one, which is innovation, commercialization, entrepreneurship, and community benefit. So again, not seen on previous plans per se and plans of other universities. One of the things we're looking at as we develop these research areas, and I'd be interested in your feedback on this as well, is struggling with the criticism, which I myself have leveled at myself in this plan all along, and which universities and institutions struggle with, is how do we make this plan really, beyond being inspirational and aspirational, how do we make it really McGill? How do we make it that you couldn't look on a website of any research-intensive university in Canada, and maybe even in North America, maybe even in the Western world, and actually find more or less the same plan? Or vice versa. You know, you could take our plan and sort of transpose it to anywhere, and it could work. Some of that is going to be true, because basically there are more than one research-intensive, student-centered universities in the world and in Canada. We have to admit that. But we also know that there are aspects that are very uniquely McGill, and we really want to see that in the plan. So that's part of what we're working on. And we're not there yet, but we're working very closely with the community. It's been very interesting for me to really honestly say, and the people working with me can say, this is not... I could not have even 2 months ago predicted what I've shown you in the last couple of slides, because it is very much not the work of one person or one office, but it's really been integrating feedback that we've heard. Some of it a little bit surprising, which has actually been quite interesting. So I look forward to your feedback today as well. You're welcome also to continue in the conversation. Both ASAP and SRP have active websites where this presentation is posted, where documents are often posted, where you have a way of submitting feedback. You also have our emails, as well as a white paper at McGill email and SRP at McGill email, which actually are read and responded to and incorporated in the plan. So you have multiple ways of giving us feedback, and I hope you'll use them. Questions, comments for either or both of us?
Stunned silence.
The staffing
of a university is, in fact, very fluid, and I would venture to say that the M category today has got a different composition than it did 10 years ago in terms of the skill sets and the distribution and the requirements. One of the things that's happened at the university with regard to the need to professionalize our M staff has been external to the university, and that's reporting requirements. Let me try to do this in a parable, right? People in the James building often complain to us that they can't work for us because they're doing work for Quebec City or Ottawa. People in the deaneries complain that they can't work for the deans because they're doing work that should be done in the James building. And people in the departments argue that they're not doing work for their own professors and students because they're doing work that should be done by the deans. So we've got this push from the outside that's created reporting requirements that didn't exist before. In Rosie's area, I'm sorry if I'll just talk a little about it, is that we have requirements for animal care that didn't exist a decade ago, and it has forced us to literally double the size of both the service component of veterinary care and the compliance. You can't have the service and the compliance reported by the same people. So you get increases. Every one of the research grants we receive requires that there be reports back on them. Canada Research Chairs, which are we have them because of the great research that's done, but they actually pay the salaries of about 10% of our professors. But there are annual reports that need to be filled out for each of these and monitored. So reporting requirements have really changed, and our financial systems have changed over time. And those things create a different environment inside the university. The number of people who we need in some of the C categories, the people who are presently, one-third of the people who are presently on strike, have changed enormously over time. We see that there, for example, we basically need fewer people to do some of the traditional work that was done in libraries. 75% decline in the number of books checked out of the Schulich Library, for example, means that you don't need to shelve as many books. On the other hand, there's an enormous pressure to provide better electronic services, and that requires a different skill set. And so there are transitions in the way in which the university has to think about the support service staff that it has. Our professors have changed as well, but for the support services, the administrative and support jobs, there's been an enormous change. And so that ratio you were talking about probably has gone down. That is to say, there are fewer C's to M's than there were before.
There are actually some current examples that could be built on. So IPLAY, the Institute for Public Life and
Public Life of Art and Ideas.
I have trouble with the acronyms. That is an example of a research center that could be and would be is being built and would be built on. But there's research in public policy, health policy, social policy, with outputs that are generally more policy-oriented, policy papers, advice to government, advice to other external organizations that we would envision. And there's a lot of strength in public policy all across McGill that is not actually organized under any umbrella, and many of which. So there's many examples.
One of the examples that comes to mind is a recent endowment of a chair on science policy that will bring art, science, and education together. So there are lots of examples in which the public policy strengths at McGill can also be focused on what our scientific strengths are and bring them together rather than keeping them as separate domains. But public policy in general is an area that we need to strengthen because we have so many professors who are good at it individually, but we don't always provide mechanisms for them to come together, and that's part of the strategic research plan as well.
And I might add, we don't yet have an umbrella that brings that research together, and similarly, we don't have an umbrella that brings that offers to students an integrated approach to studying public policy. So it could be part of the vision is to, when I talk about integrating and informing and enriching education with research, it would be facilitated and built through these large themes. So thank you for that interesting question. I'm going to go back to, so I see that it could certainly be very much involved in any theme and in any area, because I think it's our students are actually an excellent vehicle to transform research. They're not, to put it very mildly, they're not stuck in their silos like some of us who are a little bit older. Or I've been around for a little while. So they really are, they are actually in many ways driving the interdisciplinarity as they are in sustainability. And that's part of my motives in marrying and integrating research closer to education is not only, I often talk about not only to inform the research, but to actually get students to be the vehicles and the drivers of some of the new ways of doing research. And I think that's going to help at the faculty and staff level as well. One of the ones I want to mention was towards a sustainable future, that very broad theme. There in particular, we've already had feedback from students who I know are very involved in various aspects of sustainability to be a part of building this theme and part of the vehicle to get it to work.
So a couple of weeks ago, we had a very successful joint board-senate meeting on the importance of research for undergraduate education. But I think it also links to the notion of life and learning being linked, and so being within the portfolio of the Deputy Provost Student Life and Learning on the food side, but also working with Jim Neisel and the Sustainability Office, you have an opportunity to see the interests of students intersecting with their education, the research of professors, and their own research. So I think these are initiatives that would be supported in the plans.
I actually think you bring up something, and actually I think the ideas around being involved in sustainability were raised by students at that forum. But as well, I think what you raise an important point that we often don't talk about, which is implementing our research findings in how we do our own business and using McGill and our community and our campus as a living lab for some of the things we study and as an example to others, which I think the food services is an excellent example. Other universities have been doing this in terms of green buildings, recycling, and all kinds of sustainability initiatives that can be better integrated. I think right now my sense is students are doing it more on their own or with assistance from McGill, but not integrated into our mission, which we would like to do.
Yes.
Just going to go back to... So it's not in my eyes. Thanks.
That's a very big, and broad question. One of the, and it really has two different components. So let me just try to take them separately. On the one hand, not having a degree is not a liability. Once you're in the workforce and you're working, it's who you are, what your contributions are that should be counting in terms of your own career projections or progression. So after 10 years out. It's what you're doing is more important than the degree that you have. I study the labor force, and I can attest to that in terms of the way in which it works. At a university, many people feel the disadvantage of not having a degree if they haven't had a chance to finish it. And if they have the desire to finish it, and it will also be useful, then working with HR, should be possible to figure out mechanisms for helping people to do that. I'm taking that as a suggestion because we have no plans here. I'm not going to improvise them on the floor. But I think it's one of the areas in which individual career progression and individual satisfaction in terms of the contributions that one makes can be linked to helping the university achieve its goals. And so if those two things come together, we should be able to find a solution for it. So I'm going to take it as a suggestion that we would do that. But I don't think they're necessarily linked because many people make enormous contributions who don't have university degrees, and you should be able to make those contributions because of the jobs that you're doing, not because of the educational credentials that you hold. On the other hand, we do need to see how we can make those two things come together. So involvement. The committees are being struck, and some of them are already meeting, but we want input from everyone in this room. So in particular on the three committees that I mentioned where your input would be most valuable, but not necessarily limited to that, you should contact Nancy Diamond in my office or just send an email to a white paper at mcgill.ca saying you want to get involved in one of those work groups. They're listed on the web page as well. So I say career, best practices, career development, service to the community would be areas where I'm certain that this group would make valuable contributions, and you should write to whitepaper at mcgill.ca.
I will just add that the SRP Advisory Committee is formed, but we do welcome your feedback. I do meet with individual or small groups of people if you wanted to have a more informal, small group and ability to give me feedback personally. That can be arranged. You can email to the SRP website or to my the SRP email or to my email. And that could be arranged. As well, I wouldn't want to leave you with the impression, and I hope I'm not saying anything that's not legal, that it's not possible to work during the day and work full-time at McGill and complete a degree, because someone in my office, I have staff, one of which just completed a degree at Concordia, and the other is studying for her degree with some flexibility, and I think it's within the rules. And I'm not saying it isn't difficult, but if... I think the flexibility is there and the willingness is there, and I wouldn't want to leave you the impression that it's not possible. I think it is possible to work with your supervisor and work with HR to have it happen if that's what you wanted to happen.
Yes.
And what's new and what Rosie presented, the service to community, which is new among McGill's priorities. And Rosie, I mean, we've always had collaboration and expanding our networks as an interest, but now you're elucidating this as a real priority in your portfolio. What I'm interested in knowing is how the interest in serving community is translating into the research priorities, in the sense of not necessarily building research networks or speaking with government or organizations that might benefit from our research results, but also almost on a community service level, translating research results and engaging nonprofit and other organizations in the research area.
So we've been looking very carefully at some of these things in terms of our own promotion and tenure rules with regard to the way in which professors do their own research and whether or not active engagement, and that could be with community nonprofits or with industry, are recognized in the way in which professors develop their careers. So these are good points, and they are being considered in the new ways of thinking about developing academic careers. Some of the activities, that research activities of professors, are directly related to action-oriented research in the community, or they have. They can also be service with a research component. So, for example, many of our students in the sciences or in dentistry are now involved in major clinics, and those clinics actually produce and have opportunity to do research as well as to provide a service to individuals. So. Thinking about how to combine those two things is really important, but writing about action-based research is also something we're looking at, or involvement in industry contracts that don't always produce the same level of scholarly output in the traditional journals, but which have reports as their basis, or consulting to governments are also important concerns.
I'll just add to that. I think you put it well, actually, in your question, which is we've always been interested in collaborations. I don't think we've particularly really supported them or recognized the value as much as we need to. It's more work to collaborate. It takes more time. It takes more effort. There are more risks. People really need to be recognized and has to be valued. The way we're structured now, it tends to the getting very involved in collaborations and in service to community is often at the risk of the more traditional aspects of one's career, which it should often wouldn't be wise to do in terms of career progression. We want to change that so that it is wise, done within certain parameters. As well, I think we've always been interested in collaboration, but it hasn't been. But that's different than putting the focus and actually valuing it, recognizing it, and emphasizing it. And I would actually submit that the McGill culture is more designed around one's own disciplinary research and field, and not so much in reaching out to others, either to collaborate or to give back. So I think it's much more of an outward-looking perspective, outside of my own discipline, outside my department, outside of McGill. Having said that as well, I think I was a little surprised to hear that commitment to service is new to Miguel. I don't think it's really new. Perhaps the emphasis on it is new. I hope it's not new. But I think also traditionally Miguel has, where we have looked at collaboration, partnership, and involvement, it's by our nature very international. And I would submit that we are now looking more broadly at important partnerships, as well as what's important in giving back is realizing which communities we actually should be giving back to, that we want to be involved with and give back to. And that's not only the international community where we've had our emphasis. It's also Canada, Quebec, and our local community, where I would submit as well we perhaps have not been engaged as much as we can. And this plan will articulate the need to collaborate and partner closer to home as well.
While waiting for that, we should also remember that we're in the middle of a Centraide campaign, and Miguel would like to make sure that we continue to support those efforts in the community.
Our local community.
Yes. I'd like to bridge that research with some of the work going on in the SRIs. SRIs were launched about a year ago, I guess, now, and we're looking at, in your first slide, Provost Massey, M's at McGill and the different career development, succession planning, best practices. These are some of the things emerging from the SRIs. I'm wondering, can you give us a perspective of how Prof's research and management, how that research is being integrated into the development of the SRIs, and provide us with a timeline on the progress, some kind of an update mm-hmm. on where we are, where we're going, and how soon will we get there?
Right. The SRI was launched by the principal now nearly a year and a half ago, so it's been going on for some time. It's a reframing initiative not about what the strategies of the university should be, but a rethinking of the way in which we should go about achieving them. So it has three fundamental components. The first thing is, and these should sound familiar to everyone, although we don't always put them into practice. The first thing is, before you actually engage in studying a problem, do you have all the facts? So build up an appropriate fact base that consists of two things. What's the baseline at McGill? What's the best practice elsewhere? How do we get from here to there? So that the first thing is just figure out what the appropriate fact base is. The second is that you're never going to have all the information that you need, so you have to be willing to take decisions on incomplete information. But if you're guided in the right direction and you know where you want to go, that shouldn't be that problematic. So don't try to get that last 20% of information that might only make a 5% difference down the road. Act on it as quickly as you can to have it done. And the third thing is measure yourself continuously. All the time, how are we making progress? What are the measures of success? Are we clear about what the goals were, what the givens are, what the operations are, and what the goals are? It's a problem-solving approach that, while it sounds like common sense, has not always been applied to the way in which we do our work at McGill. And so the SRI is helping us to rethink our traditional way of doing things, and in a new world, the external environment that's changed, and the new conditions at McGill. 50% of our professors weren't here a decade ago. Nearly 50% of you, M's, weren't here a decade ago. 50% of the people on strike weren't here a decade ago. This is a very different university than it was certainly when I came here 32 years ago. And we have to adapt to it. There are internal changes and external realities, and SRI is simply putting those things into perspective. Each of us, Rosie, myself, Michael DeGrappa, Mark Weinstein, Morton Mendelson, all of us have projects that are in this SRI that deal with the issues that are related to our strategic directions. But they're not about setting those directions. They're about achieving them. So the SRI is really a framework for doing business, not the business we do.
I'd like to go back to Rosemary's question about the committees that have been struck, and I'm curious what kind of communication plan is being implemented beyond the website to keep the rest of the community informed of the work that's being done.
Right. that it's always a delicate balance. I think one of the things I could certainly say, my own experience over 6 years of being the provost, the thing I do least well is communicate outside of meetings. I mean, we don't have a good communications plan. Nancy Diamond from my office is working on it. What we need to be able to do, in addition to the web pages and forums like this one, are to have continual mechanisms, not just without bombarding the community with messages that get filed in the circular file, right? I mean, we have to figure out a way to do that that will be meaningful to everyone. So periodically, we'd like to continue to have these fora in which we bring people together and let you talk about where we are. As each of the work groups progresses, we'd like to have open fora with town halls or other mechanisms for consulting on each of the individual specific items that go into the white paper. So those work groups are being formed. Some of them already exist and are working. There are only 5 work groups because we have 5 other groups that are already part of the way the university is doing its business or part of the SRI that are feeding information in. But the ones where we really need help are, and they really do come from you, what is a meaningful career at McGill? What do you understand to be best practices to support the academic mission and how can we get there? And what kinds of things are we already doing in terms of service to the community that we could do better if we put our mind to it? So I really encourage you to first write to whitepaper at McGill.ca or SRP at McGill.ca. For your with making suggestions and volunteering your time if you have it.
And building on the point about it's difficult to communicate well, we'll take suggestions too about what would work.
Yeah. Questions? I usually have a litany where I say questions, comments, suggestions, then I go criticisms. Complaints? There it is, a complaint.
Maybe a suggestion or a comment or hopefully something constructive. I think students have really great ideas on communication mechanisms and these days. And so I guess certainly, you know, I think we all have a role maybe to suggest in those meetings or in our little work groups and things like that. The way our structure is at the university and just how big we are and how much is going on, you know, I will hear from staff, well, yes, there are papers and there are plans and those sorts of things, but are they sitting on the shelf? And oftentimes I think, no, I've heard of an instance of this initiative, this interdisciplinary research that has really been amazing, but if you didn't read what's new or you didn't look at the homepage, you know, did we find out? And I think sometimes it's such a shame because we don't know about all the wonderful things going on, and the plan seems really promising. So I guess maybe we all have a role to kind of, you know, any of us who interact with students too, to maybe ask them to send along or, you know, if you're open to receiving those sorts of suggestions on communication mechanisms or, you know, just the frequency with which communications happen or at what level. Not everything is a consultation. Something is just, you know, for information, but I think there is so much going on, and maybe our structure, the environment, that sort of thing doesn't always encourage that kind of information sharing. So I guess just a suggestion that I've heard amazing ideas from students on that level of engagement with communications too. So that's something to consider. Thank you.
Thank you. That's a great suggestion. The principal was at we had a meeting with groups of students from all the student associations after the events of the 10th of November. And one of the things that came out, which was interesting at the end, had nothing to do with the actual events, was that the Engineering Student Society in particular liked the idea that we had a web page up and that they could put information there. They suggested lots of other communication devices, all of which would unfortunately have me attached to my computer most of the day. I don't tweet very well, and I'm certainly not a good blogger right now because I don't have the time, but they made lots of suggestions, and we might have to follow up on them in another way to make sure we get that information. It's a great idea. Thank you.
I think part of what it's embedded in your constructive comment, thank you, is that we can all be, if you inform yourselves about these plans, you can be ambassadors. Because we can't possibly, no matter how much we try, do all the communication, and it's not actually even appropriate, or the best way, as you say, not everything's a consultation. So really spreading what you know to others with enthusiasm, I think, will work well.
Hi. It's Enrique from the CIHR Institute of Genetics. So one of the institutes here at McGill, and I think that McGill is this is a great display of the strength of research since four institutes are currently located here. So I'm also an employee of McGill, of course. And I would like to know how for the strategic research plan you're thinking to integrate the view of the various founders to enhance or like at least to provide tools to the researcher to be ready when the actual RFAs are actually launched. So in terms of partnerships, that's obviously a huge aspect, and I would like to know how we could like help you maybe develop this better, and also the other way around, so how we could better have an outreach to the community. And when you're talking about Quebec, Montreal, and this is like all important aspects of our goals right now. So,
so I think I guess it's a comment kind of question, and you know, it was multi-leveled. So let me know if I don't catch all of it or get to all of your question. In general, the question, I think, is about how do we interact with our funders? How do we ensure that we're in good communication with them? Well, I think that's part of my answer. We're in good communication with our funders. They have their priorities. Part of what we're looking at in setting our priorities is the part of the environmental scan is that context. The funders and the federal government, provincial government, and not-for-profits and foundations, corporations, what are their research priorities and strategies? And frankly, we need to be aligned with those. They're also looking at the larger questions, because that's so that there is actually a lot of alignment, even if one didn't actually look at them. It's actually natural that there should be alignment. And if there isn't alignment, then we have to question where we're headed or where we came from. So I think there is a lot of alignment. There's a lot of conversation. I've been engaged with the directors of CIHR institutes who are at McGill, the four, and people connected to them in order to understand their priorities as well. And I think part of your question was how are we, or at least I'm going to interpret it as, we're going to use the strategic research priorities and the plan in order to assist researchers and McGill in general to be prepared for the larger initiatives. So these large interdisciplinary areas are purposefully designed, and they should be designed, to be able to bring groups of researchers together, both at McGill and in partnership with partners and other institutions, in order to be ready for the calls, because they come quickly, and we have to be prepared before. So that's part of the thinking of the plan, so that it won't stay on the shelf. These themes will actually lead to actions and groups being formed and work being done, so that we're not, as we have, I think, in the past, has been natural, or reacted to priorities of other of funders and calls, but rather we will be ready with focused groups of people who actually have their partnerships in place, et cetera, to answer those calls. Does that answer your question? So part of being strategic is being prepared, especially in the complex research world. It's not sufficient. You can do that in disciplinary level research, kind of react to this call and that call. But because collaboration and partnership is much more complex, we have to actually build all of those relationships all the time, or we will not be competitive.
I guess if there are no further questions, thank you very much for your attention and for your suggestions and questions and comments. And please do stay involved and use the srp@mcgill.ca, whitepaper@mcgill.ca to communicate, or go to the web pages that were listed, and this presentation will be available. And I guess it's streamed as well. So thank you very much for your attention.